The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
We're studying Yitro, and we've been focusing on just the first verse, which says, "And Yitro, Cohen, the priest of Midian, the father-in-law of Moses, heard all that God did, that Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei took them out of Egypt." Why are we studying this? We have to always get back to the frame of reference. Why are we studying this? Why is this important? What do I care about Yitro hearing this or that? What does it mean to me within the context of the stories? What does it mean to me here in Israelite? Why am I studying this? Why did I select this? Because if you don't keep orientation to why you're studying it, it's not going to be very meaningful, or it's going to be much less meaningful. Okay? So why are we studying that? Yes, sir.
It's about change.
It's about change. Well, that's a general thing, and everything in Judaism is about change. Yeah?
It's about tshuva.
It's about tshuva, and that's true. Yeah?
If Yitro could believe in Hashem, then so could we, because it was much more of a difficult thing for him.
Wow, that's a very good point. That if Yitro could come to this, my gosh, then maybe we don't have as great a challenge as he. But more specifically within the text, we're reading it because it is obviously a prep. It's setting the stage. It's the prelude to the most important event in Jewish history, which is the giving of the Torah at Sinai. Right? And we mentioned the other day that there is a question amongst the commentaries within our tradition whether this story actually does come before the giving of the Torah at Sinai or not. And if in fact it did not come before, but rather after, then our question is even greater. Well then, why change it? It must mean that something about Yitro and the dynamics of Yitro sets the stage for us to understand what it means to receive the Torah. Okay? And that's why we're studying this also. Because in order to understand what the Torah is, we need to understand what it takes to prepare towards receiving the Torah. Okay? And that itself will define for us the meaning of the Torah and the meaning of the event. Alright. Yesterday we pointed out that Yitro, we see him not only as a human being in history, we don't see the story only as something that historically happened, but something that actually is happening. Okay? Just like I mentioned, when you go into a movie, and whatever the movie is, well, you don't walk out and say, well, you really think that happened? And the answer is, I'm not sure, but I know it happens. Right? The situation is absolutely true. And therefore, when we study the Torah not only for the sake of recognizing what historically happened, but recognizing what psychologically, spiritually, metaphysically happens right now in our life. And there's something about Yitro that's in us also. And Yitro's challenge that we'll be finding in our lives also. And so yesterday we pointed out that the Talmud, and we are right now giving selections, almost layers and layers of the meaning, and part of this is to give you appreciation of the different resources that one can use to bring bear towards the text and really kind of squeeze the text for its meaning. And so yesterday we looked at the Talmud. And the Talmud asked the question, what did he hear that made him come? It's clear that his hearing is somewhat connected to his coming, right? Because then he heard and he came. That doesn't mean anything. I heard the news this morning and I came to work. Does hearing the news have anything to do with my coming to work? Maybe yes, maybe no, but probably no in that sentence. But clearly in this sentence, the understanding is that his hearing is what's motivating this phenomenal transformation of this man who is seen as the epitome of idolatry in that world, right? The supreme priest of idolatry of the world at that time, and he has had such a transformation. What did he hear? So the text told us what he heard. He heard what Elohim did to Moses and Israel, his people, and or that Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei took them out of Egypt. And we don't understand, well, so what? Everybody heard that, right? So what's special about his hearing? What did he hear? What did he really hear? All right? And so the Midrash, so the Talmud says, there are three opinions, and we pointed out that those three opinions are not necessarily arguing, nor are they vying for trying to clarify what actually did he hear. But very often, Midrashic literature is not necessarily concerned with the facts as much as something that we need to know about the process of change. And so he gave us three examples. One is that he heard about the victory the Jewish people had over Amalek. Amalek went out to destroy the Jewish people, and in the most amazing way, the Jewish people who were not trained in warfare, they'd been slaves for 210 years, this is only, you know, weeks after getting out, they succeed in winning this war. And so he hears of this war, and so we suggested that what motivates change is fear, right? They can do that to Amalek, what they could do to me. Another opinion is he heard of the giving of the Torah. Obviously, that opinion is that this is happening after the Torah. And he saw that there's something good there. There's something valuable there. And so there's a sense of not running from something, but running to something. Fear changes people. I want to run away from something that's painful or dangerous. But I also am motivated by love, a sense of what I'm running to. Okay? And then the other opinion was the splitting of the Red Sea. Right? Which is awe. Which also changes people. Inspires people. It makes them think twice, hopefully more than twice, of so what really is going on in this world. Alright, well that was the Talmud. Now I want to look at the Midrash. Okay, so let's look at the Midrash. Actually, what you know I'm going to do, something a little different. Instead of saying, okay, I want you to read this whole text, which you didn't have a chance to do this page yet, have you? No. So what we're going to do is Midrash by Midrash. I'll give you a couple minutes to work on the Midrash, and then we will discuss it together. So I would like you to work on this piece over here from Midrash till where it says 4. I want you to work on that, and you've got about 3 minutes to work on that, read that, discuss it, 3-4 minutes to do it, and then we'll do it together. All right. When I'm looking at a Midrash, I always want to ask myself, what is this Midrash's point? What do I now appreciate about the text that I perhaps, prior to reading this, I did not appreciate? So when it says, when Esav heard of Israel's departure, he came to do battle with them. For it says, then came Amalek. Remember, Amalek is a descendant of Esav. And yet Esav is the brother of Jacob. And therefore, really, these are close relations. Okay, in other words, in a roundabout way, Amalek, being a descendant of Esav, is a much more closer relative than Midian, Yitro, who are not as closely related. And yet, when Esav heard of Israel's departure, he came to do battle. But when Jethro heard, do you mind if I call him Yitro? I call him Yitro heard Israel's praises sung, he joined them. As it says, now Jethro, Yitro, heard. Alright? What is the point of this Midrash? What is the Midrash elucidating over here? It's creating a contrast, right? A contrast between Amalek and Yitro. And of course the story is just so in terms of it being juxtaposed, right? That we just finished off with this fight with Amalek, and now we have Yitro coming towards the Jewish people. In other words, two completely different non-Jews having two completely different reactions. Right? Amalek are out to get us, and Yitro decides to join us. And of course, one of the questions we're wondering as we're reading this is why? What's the difference between Amalek and Yitro? What's the secret that Yitro knew or had that they, for some reason, did not have? Why do you think they attacked the Jewish people? From Amalek's point of view, why attack them? Did the Jewish people do anything to you? What? They're God's chosen people, that's a good reason to attack them? What?
Threatens their way of life.
They feel threatened. You attack somebody when you feel you're being threatened. Now, why would you be threatened? I mean, the Jewish people are not going around saying we're going to take over the world or we're going to destroy the world or anything like that. These are people that were enslaved. Amalek did not enslave them. They were enslaved. They were miraculously redeemed and brought out of Egypt. And they're on their way, right? Why all of a sudden should they feel threatened by the Jewish people? But let's think about this. It's idolatry versus one God. Well, do they think that there's even a possibility for one God and there's really even an issue? Or in their mind, they see it as another form of idolatry. It's the God of Israel. You know, there's our God, his God, their God, right? And the God of Israel. And does this mean that we're going to have to now serve the God of Israel? You know what happened in the ancient days when there was a war? When one country would beat the other country, what would happen to the country that lost the war? What? Exactly. You would have to convert. Right? Why would you have to convert? Because the war meant what? Exactly. It means my God is stronger than your God because we beat you. Right? And therefore, you must serve us and our God. That was the way it was. The only exception to this rule was the Jewish people. Right? Why? Because when the Jewish people would be taken over by another country, the Jewish people would not accept. I mean, there were, of course, some that did. But there were many, many that did not accept the God of that nation. Why would they not accept the God of that nation? What justification could they bring? Because they would say, it's not your God that beat our God. It's our God that allowed you to beat us because we did something wrong. Right? And that would drive the ancient world nuts. Right? Because you could never beat the Jews. Because they'd always be saying, no, this is God punishing us. And you're just his, you know, you're just his vehicle. And that drives even more crazy. Right? What can we say? You're just a vehicle for our God, and we have to do tshuva, and we have to repent, and then, you know, God will wipe you out. And that's the way it is, and that would drive them crazy. Okay? That would just drive the ancient world crazy. But the Jews were the only ones that would say this. Alright? Now, obviously, Amalek feels very threatened. Although, it's kind of funny. Why? What do they know about the Jewish people at this point that they feel so threatened? Okay? Oh, that's an interesting point. It could be that they've had a long tradition of hate towards the Jews anyways. And it might not be threat. It might be just simply hate. Could be, yes.
No,
he says not Jewish. Jacob was a Jew. They were brothers, but there's no idea of Jew yet. Okay? Jacob inherits the covenant. There's a notion called covenant, not Jew. Right? And who participated in the covenant? At what point did the covenant become genetic?
Did Moses
become Jewish? No. After Jacob, all of Jacob's children are born Jews. Until then, Jewishness was basically a philosophical decision that people would make in terms of the belief in one God and the service of one God and all the ethical, moral implications of believing in one God, which is one of the things we're going to be talking about soon. Follow this? Everything okay? So now we're sensitizing ourselves. We're getting into the drama of Esav. Well then, what about Yitro? Because this Midrash is obviously comparing Yitro to Esav. By virtue of contrast, we appreciate Yitro even more. Because if nobody would have attacked the Jewish people, and the story was nobody attacked the Jewish people, nobody joined them either, but Yitro joined them, so would we be so impressed with Yitro? Not so impressed. But the contrast is what brings out Yitro even more. We see here's this nation who obviously felt enough hate, okay? And here comes Yitro, and he's going to join the Jewish people. So this is what the Midrash is doing. The Midrash is comparing. Esav heard and went to battle, but Yitro heard and he came to join them. All right, and the question is, so what did he know that they didn't know? How did he see the situation that they didn't see it that way? What is it that his perspective inspired him to join them? And what about their perspective, right, inspired them and motivated them to try and kill them? So we read on a little bit. Another explanation of now Yitro heard. It is written, the wise shall inherit honor. This refers to Yitro, What great honor he inherited when he visited Moses. Now, what is this Midrash telling me? It doesn't seem to say anything about now Yitro heard. What is the Midrash trying to answer? What question is it answering? By saying, it's like that game, they give you the answer and then you have to figure out the question? Well, very often that's the way you play Torah. Which is they give you the answer and you got to figure out what was their question and then you appreciate their answer even more. Alright? So what is the somehow it says, and Yitro heard. And then all of a sudden it says, there's a verse in Proverbs, the wise shall inherit honor. What does that mean? Yeah.
He became moral.
He became moral? It didn't say moral. It doesn't say the word moral here at all.
Wise.
Wise. In other words, this is telling us that what is the secret of Yitro? He is wise. Okay? He's simply wise. Whereas obviously, Amalek must have been fools. Okay? A wise person would respond this way. This is very interesting, because what is this Midrash telling me? Well, when I'm looking at this story, I might think, well, gee, why did Yitro respond this way and nobody else did? I mean, he must have known something, might have had a secret, maybe he had some metaphysical psychic sense. But what is this Midrash telling us? He was just simply wise. In other words, this Midrash is telling us that what Yitro did, anybody could have done. Because all it took was wisdom. Right? Took intelligence. And what is the intelligence about? It's only fools who looked at the Jewish people and were threatened. Right? Because they wouldn't have to threaten you. They wouldn't have to get you. And yet Yitro realized that. And all it took was wisdom. But what does wisdom bring you to? It brings you to honor. What was the honor that he ultimately gets? To become Jewish. The honor he gets is to feel the connection with the Shekhinah, with the divine presence. That's what it's going to talk about soon. That's the honor. In other words, wisdom brings you to a spiritual progress. Alright? And obviously, Amalek were just simply fools. They didn't know what was in it. Now, you know, part of the issue over here is going to be the nature of rejection. Because everyone's starting to feel around town that the Jewish people are chosen. And of course, the question of chosenness is a very serious question. What does chosenness mean? Does chosenness mean rejection of the world? No, not at all. Chosenness actually, in Jewish understanding, is God's affirmation of his commitment to the world. That God chose the Jewish people as a light unto the nations. And therefore, chosenness is not God's rejection of the world, but rather, it's just the opposite. It's God affirming his commitment to the world by appointing someone to be responsible to bring the light of God into the world, for the world. Do you hear this? And so this could also be part of the struggle over here, which is, well, what is this? What's going on? Let's read out a little more. So what's unique about Yitro? Nothing other than being wise. Anyone wise would have reacted this way, respond this way. And he said unto Moses, I, thy father-in-law, Yitro, am coming unto thee. Rabbi Yeshua said that he sent a messenger unto Moses. Now why would Rabbi Yeshua say that? When he read this verse, why did he feel that that's obviously what happened? Why couldn't you just say he came by himself? Because nobody comes up to you and say, I am coming to you. Right? If I'm there, I'm there. Understand? It's clear when you read the verse that there is something here that's understood. That it's not him personally saying this, because you don't personally say to somebody, you know, I don't come to Ari and say, Ari, I, David Aaron, the rabbi of Israelite, is coming to you. You don't do that. You say, hi Ari, I'm here. I mean, that's what you say. Therefore, it's clear, it's indicated in the verse that he must have sent a messenger. But of course, what's the difference if he sent the messenger or not? Remember, we've got to pay an actor to be the messenger. It might cost us some money. Let's cut that out. It's not important to the scene. We'll just cut. We'll do it all over. We'll just simply have Yitro come in and introduce himself. Right? Of course, the author says, what? You're taking out the messenger? At all costs, you keep him in. You say, why? Why? I don't understand why. Why is it so important that there's a messenger that's bringing this? Exactly. You don't come up to a person unless you feel absolutely confident that they're going to say, welcome. Right? Welcome. And that's important for the scene. The important for the scene is that Yitro is feeling a fear of rejection nonetheless. He's afraid that maybe Moses will say, go away, you goy. Right? That's what he's afraid he might say. What's so beautiful about these midrashim is that's not at all what a Jew would say to another human being. Do you hear this? Very important midrash. So a messenger comes. And then the fact that a messenger is sent itself gives us the sense of the fear of rejection that the father-in-law is dealing with. Rabbi Ezra said that he sent him a letter with the request saying, well, it wasn't a messenger, but it was a letter. Okay? A little different. He's even suggesting that, you know, even more fear of rejection. Why? What's the difference if it was a messenger or a letter? We're trying to figure out the script, right? We're in the drama, we're the producers, we're deciding, well, listen, we can save ourselves some money, we don't have to hire a messenger, the scene will be a letter. Okay, and they're discussing what will make the scene more come alive and really impart the experience. Well, what do you think? How many people think a messenger is a better way to dramatize the scene? But here it's saying that it's a letter. He's saying, one says it was a messenger, which almost implies it's oral. The other one said, no, he sent them a letter. Not necessarily. At that point, the messenger will have no lines, and it'll be much cheaper for us to simply get some guy off the street to walk in with a letter, rather than have to pay someone to say, I come on behalf of Yitro and he, right? What's the difference in the scene? Okay? Yes, Jay?
A letter
is more private. Why would a person then want it to be more private? Because it's even a greater fear of rejection. In other words, we're thinking, you know what? It's not a question of money here. It's a question of, with the letter, it demonstrates an even greater sense of fear of rejection. He doesn't want a messenger to hear him say, go away. Go back and tell him no. Right? So, what basically are the sages struggling with over here? What they are sensing in the text over here, and what they're delivering to us through our tradition, is the feeling that Yitro does have fears of rejection. And the difference between Yitro and Amalek is he sends a messenger. He sends a letter. Right? Before you're so sure you're going to be rejected, maybe you should say hello. Right? Maybe you should just say hello and see what happens. But you see over here, what does he put in the request? Do it for my sake. And should you be unwilling to do it for my sake, then do it for the sake of your wife. And if you're reluctant to grant my request for her sake, then do it for the sake of your children. What does that mean? What is he saying? He's building up some kind of argument. The fact is, listen, if you're not willing to do it for my sake, obviously implies that he has fears that he won't do it for his sake. Okay? So the Midrash gives us an even greater sense of the color to this scene. That Yitro does fear rejection and really is hoping to be accepted. And the contrast is what makes it so dramatic. Because what is the contrast? What is the contrast that then happens? Not only Moses goes out to meet him, but the Midrash says Moses went out to meet his father-in-law. The sages said with Moses there also went out Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, 70 of the elders. Some say the ark also went out with them. What are they talking about? What was the contrast? The contrast is what brings this drama alive. Imagine you're so sure that your friend's absolutely, incredibly furious with you, and you're thinking so carefully how with kid gloves to approach them and somehow secure their acceptance. And to your shock, you know, not only do they accept you, but you walk in and they're actually, they've hosted your birthday party, right? Now, wow! Now, why is this important as a Jew to know this midrash when I'm reading these stories? What is important in terms of Jewish consciousness? And how does this relate to the preparations for the receiving of the Torah at Sinai? Because of course, what did everybody think the receiving of the Torah of Sinai means? It sounds like such a particularistic, private affair between God and His people, and it's not for you, outsiders, keep away. This is a private, exclusive club. And it's absolutely important to understand that there was never the understanding the Jews had. Right? It might have evolved, what can I say? Right? And it's a very sad thing, you might meet Jews that have very narrow understandings of the rest of the world. But when you look at the sources, you see that here is a man who is the epitome, right? The epitome of idolatry. And yet we could say, I don't know about him. Yeah, you think he can really make the change? Right? I mean, unfortunately, there's a group called the B'nai Noach, which is a group of non-Jews who have given up Christianity and have basically embraced the seven Noetic commandments as part of the Judaic tradition. The Judaic tradition has a tradition for a universal religion. And there are people, I mean, I've met them and I've had them come in Israel and speak, but I've met people who feel, watch out, they're trying to be missionaries, they're trying to do this, they're, you know, this is all of this. In other words, now, I'm not saying that one should surrender their critical mind. You don't want to be a fool either. But to just, you know, out and out say, well, if a person had a past like that, they could never make this kind of a change. Why? This is what I always feel is so incredible about Judaism. It's such an optimistic religion. It believes that human beings can change. One of its most fundamental principles is that you can surpass your situation. You can transcend your past. You can surpass your nature. Yes, you can. Because you have a spark of the divine. Because you, in your essential I, are a spark of the divine. Are connected with the transcendental. And so this is what's so beautiful about this midrash when you really reflect upon and realize what are the implications of this midrash? What is it really saying over here? Very important. Very, very important. And you know, I heard a beautiful story from Rabbi Shlomo Karbach, Zichrono Levracha. There was a story about a Rebbe who went back to his Polish shtetl, his Polish little town from where he came, during the period of Sukkot. You know, in Sukkot you have to build a booth, which is one of the things you're going to learn in your festivals class. And he went with a few of his chassidim, a few of his disciples. When they got there, this old Jew who'd been living in Poland for all those years, when he saw the Rebbe and his chassidim dressed up, you know, in a chassidish array with the strime of the long black coat, he came out and began to curse them in the most vile way. A Jew cursing another Jew, but not only another Jew, but a Rebbe, right? Where the Hasidim were so agitated, they were about to jump down that guy's throat. And the Rebbe said, hold on. Let me handle this. So while this Jew is cursing and cussing this rabbi, he comes up to him and he looks at him and says, would you like to join us in our sukkah? And the man started to cry. And he said, nobody's invited me into their sukkah. Nobody. So the Rebbe went back and said, you see, that's the problem. The reason why he was cursing and cussing us is because he didn't believe that we'd let him join us. And when he knew that we would, he had no reason to hate us. Right? He'd have no reason to hate us. And so too, very important to understand, before I get the Torah, right? Before I get the Torah, I have to get some of my relationship expectations clarified. What will I be and what will be the nature of my relationship to the rest of the world? And then I need to clarify before I get that Torah. Because otherwise I can really come out a very narrow, dogmatic person who looks at the rest of the world and says, writes off the world, we're the chosen, we got the Torah, and now we go on with life and forget about the world. Right? Nobody at this point, nobody could make change, nobody could grow, nobody could come under the wing of the Shekhinah of the Divine Presence. And that's what's so brilliant about this story. Right? Whether it indeed happened after Torah, or it did not, when we read the text, and when we in our life come to the Torah, because we come to it right now in our lives by studying the Torah, engaging ourselves in Torah, we need to have a healthy universalistic attitude. We must have a healthy universalistic attitude. Let's read on. Let's read on. Let's take another couple of minutes and look at Midrash 4 and let's get a sense of the insights it bears on the text. Tell me, when you read this text, first of all, based on this Midrash, how does it understand when this story happened? Okay, remember, we have two options. Either this happened before the giving of Torah Sinai or after. When you read this, according to this Midrash, it's clearly referring to after. Okay. Now, when we read the Midrash, is there a word that seems to repeat itself? Because when a word repeats itself, that's a good key that this is somewhat the theme or the central point of it. Okay? And it's a very good common practice to underline key words or repetitive words in a methodological way when you're studying Torah. All right, you see a word coming up a lot in a few sentences, then it must be a very central word. It's probably going to give you an understanding, appreciation of what's the story. So what's the key word in this Midrash? Strength. Strength, stronghold. Let's read it. Another explanation of Now Yitro heard. It is written, O Lord, my strength and my stronghold and my refuge. In the day of affliction, unto thee shall the nations come from the ends of the earth. Israel said to the Holy One, blessed be here. That's from Jeremiah, that verse. Okay? Now this is quite a common, common practice of the Midrash, that it looks at a verse, and then it reminds them of another verse. And of course, if you're really studying Torah properly, you would want to look this verse up in the text. You'd like to see what comes after it, what comes before it, to really appreciate the verse. You must know something. The Midrash, when it brings a verse, doesn't always quote the entire verse. And it's very possible that much of what it's kind of reflecting on is part of the verse that hasn't been quoted. Alright? Do you follow this? Meaning it assumes you're going to look up the verse or that you know the verse. Alright? So it's important to understand that when you're reading it, that don't think that just simply the words that it wrote is the words that it's reflecting on. It's very possible it's the last part of the sentence, and it went dot, 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 and that dot, dot, dot really, or it meant to, I mean, it implied dot, 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 and you're supposed to go look for the dots. Alright. But we're not going to do that because that would take a lot of time right now, and we're just getting a sense of the method of how one really participates in the drama of the Torah. Israel said to the Holy One, blessed be He, when thou didst perform miracles for us, we said to thee, the Lord is my strength and song. All right. Did not Rachav, when she heard of them, cleave unto thee? As it says, and she said unto the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, for we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you. Now Rachav, very fascinating woman. She's a prostitute. Okay, she's a prostitute. When the Jewish people were about to enter into the land of Israel, all right, they sent spies to check out the land in case there will be need for a military action. All right, and so these two spies went into Israel. Where did they go? Well, where would be the best place to go to find out what's really going on in the country or in the city, right? You go to the prostitute. Because the prostitute knows everything. Because so many, if not all, the government officials are using her services. And therefore they went to a prostitute, okay? Knowing that she can divulge all the information. That's what's going on, you know. All of a sudden the president, now we know everything about him because there's some prostitute that comes around. And this has happened a lot of times that these kind of women show up and say, well, he did this and he said that and he does this. Okay, so they went to Rachav. Alright, what's fascinating about Rachav is she says, I know that God's going to give the city over to you. This is when they're about to capture Jericho. I know that God is going to give you the city to you. But please, I want you to make a deal with me that you will save me and my family. Alright? And they say, okay. Alright? In the end, this prostitute marries Joshua. Do you understand? Joshua, who was the you know, second in command after Moses, he was the prime student of Moses, he was the leader after Moses. Our tradition tells us that he ends up marrying this woman, Rahab. Now talk about optimism. Talk about the belief in change. Talk about the fact that we don't hold a person's past against them whatsoever. That a woman as Rahab, right, can convert and she can cleave and join the community of Israel. And not only cleave and join, but she can even marry Yeshua the leader. Alright? Because that's how much we believe in the possibility of change. Okay, so the Jewish people say, look, it's working. You're my strength, you're my stronghold. When you did a miracle for me, and I acknowledged your strength, look what it did for someone like Rahab. She was inspired by the Jewish people. She looked at her life, she said, I don't want to be this way anymore. And the change brought her to such holiness that she was able to even marry Yeshua. Anyways, the proof code, it says, a proof that thou art my Lord, my strength, my stronghold, my refuge in the day of affliction. Then what does it mean? How is that a proof? The fact that Rahab, right, acknowledges God, how is that a proof that God is our strength, God is our stronghold? Do you follow the question? When you're reading it carefully, you have to understand how the text is reading. It's not the Jewish people she's attracted to. She didn't want to go out with Jews because she likes knishes and she happens to think we make great chicken soup. Right? That's not what attracts her about the Jews. What attracts her about the Jews is when the Jews recognize that God is my strength, God is my stronghold, God is my refuge. Then everybody's going to love the Jews when they really do that. I think I mentioned it to one of the groups before. There's a rap group called Public Enemy. Right? And there's a lot of anti-Semitism. I'm pretty sure it was Public Enemy. And a lot of anti-Semitism in their rap. So there was an interview with the lead singer of this group and asked him, do you hate Jews? He said, I don't hate all Jews. Right? I just hate the ones that don't keep the Torah. That's what this man said. When I read this interview, I was in shock. I'm like, what is he talking about? Says, I just hate the ones that don't keep the Torah, the ones who keep the Torah. I love that. It was really wild. I mean, it was really wild. In other words, you know, what do the Jewish people think is going to be attractive and special about them in the eyes of the world? Alright? It's when they themselves indicate that it is God who is my strength. But when the Jewish people, whatever successes they have demonstrated throughout history, start saying, well, it's my strength, it's my power, we did it. Right? Turns everybody off. Turns everybody off. You know, like they say, well, okay, you don't interest me. You don't interest me. So Rachel was so impressed, right? Let's go on. When you did miracles in the days of Solomon, as it says, and he would give strength unto his king, did not the queen of Sheba come and praise thee? As it says, and when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon because of the name of the Lord, that's what she heard about Solomon. It was the name of the Lord that gave her that desire to praise. What did she say? Blessed be the Lord thy God who delighted in thee. That is what it says. She didn't look at, oh, Solomon, you're so smart, you're so wise. She said, Solomon, you're so close to God. And that really impresses me. Right? That's really what should impress anybody about anybody. Is that their wisdom or their brains or their money? You want to meet a person who you feel really walks with the presence. And then that's impressive. I mean, that's impressive. That's worth acknowledging. And then it says, when thou didst take us out of Egypt and gave us the Torah, which is called strength, as it says, the Lord will give strength unto his people. Did not Yitro come and cleave to you? And this is a proof, unto thee shall the nations come from the ends of the earth. The nations from the ends of the earth will come and join the Jewish people worshipping the one God when they see what? When they see what, does this Midrash say? When they see that God is the strength of the Jewish people. Now this is very interesting. Why are people threatened by the whole idea of religion, a religious lifestyle? Why are people threatened by living a life based on a belief in Hashem, in God? Well, yeah.
Say, I don't feel like they could ever attain spiritual or ever understand.
Oh, that's a very positive thing. I was a little more pessimistic, but I think that's true. Sometimes people don't move forward because they don't believe they could. Yes.
I feel like they'll lose that themselves.
Exactly. These are two sides of one coin, but both equally important. Either because I'm afraid I'll never reach this level, or I'm afraid I'm going to lose myself, I'm going to lose my strength. Doesn't religion disarm me of my true powers to live a life of an individual? Doesn't it take away from me the license of my creativity, my drives? That's what a lot of people think. They think, oh my gosh, you know, when a religious person is a person who has very little drive and strength. Oh, the reason why you're religious is because you're a nebuchadnezzar. You know, you're a nerd, you're a loser. I mean, a lot of people think that. That's why for people there's almost a feeling of embarrassment to say, you know, I've decided to go learn about religion, God, Torah. People look like, well, I thought you were normal. I thought you were happy. I didn't think you need this handicap. I didn't think you needed this crutch. I didn't think you needed this opium for the masses. It's so well put by a Jew named Marx, right? Right? I thought you were together. Alright? I remember I was at this cocktail party with a friend of mine who was also a student. He wanted me to come with him to this party where a whole bunch of friends and family were going to be there. Now he was in yeshiva, and now he was more committed to Judaism. And so I said, sure, why not? So we got there, and these are people who hadn't seen him in a long time. And they saw him, and they go, oh, Stephen, we're so happy that you've found yourself. You know, it's such a demeaning, I was like, basically what she was really saying is, Stephen, you were always a jerk, a loser, right? You were out in the streets, and if you're in the yeshiva and it makes you happy and it keeps you off drugs, well then, I guess that's better than, that was everything, and everybody was like that to this guy. It was like, seeing his religious commitment as a sign of weakness rather than strength. But here is a fascinating and very important midrash. That the midrash calls Torah strength. The Lord will give strength unto his people. Right? Just the opposite of what people think. They think, well, my God, Torah. My God, if I live Torah, if I live by these rules, it's going to weaken me. It's just the opposite. It empowers me. Right? By virtue of my service to God, I become empowered by service. Service isn't really. Well, service doesn't end in surrender. Service starts in surrender and ends in power. And that's something people don't understand. That's what I don't understand. Torah empowers a person. It gives them drive. It gives them push. It gives them confidence. It gives them clarity. And so Amalek looked at the Jewish people and said, oh, here comes those Jew boys. And who knows what's going to happen if we all have to serve this one God. Okay? We don't want that. That's going to deprive us of our personal initiatives, and it's going to deprive us of our creativity, our drives, our spontaneity. We don't want that, the Amalekites are saying. But Yitro was wise. And all it took was wisdom. And he realized, what are you talking about? I see that this is giving people, the Jewish people, strength. Right? They're not coming out of this experience like wimps. This is giving them tremendous strength. And therefore, this midrash is suggesting to us to understand that human change is predicated on a sense of how will I grow? How will I evolve? And he realized that Torah will help him evolve. You know what the word Torah means? It means instructions, but it also means to shoot, to propel. Lirot means to shoot a gun. Right? In other words, we see the Torah as a spiritual power that propels us, that launches us. Whereas, yes, everybody heard the Jewish people got out, God did these miracles. But what did they hear when they heard that story? They heard, uh-oh, big time God over here, beating up on people. Right? Jewish people found themselves a new king that they're going to have to be enslaved to. But Yitro heard and realized that when the Jewish people came out, they said, God is my strength, God is my stronghold, God is my refuge. And therefore the whole world will come running to serve the one God. And that is our image, right? That's one of the understandings of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Here, Israel, God, our God, will be the one God for the whole world. And it won't be Israel's God. Right now it's Israel's God, because Israel so far is the one that has totally acclaimed the oneness of God. Okay? But we have, at the very root of a very particularistic lifestyle, an ideal and a vision for a universal brotherhood and sisterhood under the service of one God. That doesn't mean everyone become Jewish. Right? That doesn't mean you're going to now be obligated and putting on tefillin. Okay? Although there will be many, many that will even want to do that. But that's not necessarily our goal. Alright? So, we see over here, so what was special about Yitro? He heard. He really listened. And that's the whole point of all this, is change begins with learning to listen. Deep, sensitive, open-minded listening. Hearing. If you can't do it, then you've missed the first step. The first step in growing. And that's it. I've just met so many people who are so involved with trying to argue, trying to disprove, trying to fight. Just let's listen and then we will respond. But listening. When a person listens, they respond. When a person doesn't listen, they react. That's the difference. Amalek did not listen. They did not hear. Oh, it was all over the place. They heard it. They knew about it. But they didn't hear. Really hear. So they reacted. Yeah. But Yitro was the wise man. And wisdom leads a person to holiness. Okay, let's read the next piece over here. Number 5. Let's take a couple minutes to look at that. Okay, I'll tell you. Another explanation. Now Yitro. It is written, the stranger did not lodge in the street. Now what has that got to do with Yitro all of a sudden? Well, who's Yitro? He's the stranger. He's the strangest. Because he is the epitome of idolatry of that time. As written above in the section, this is the ordinance of the Passover. This is what it says. If a proselyte, which is a person who converts, okay? Proselyte is a person from the word proselytize. Proselyte is a person who's converted. If a proselyte married the daughter of an Israelite, and she gave birth to a daughter, and this daughter afterwards married a qualified priest, and gave birth to a son, and this son is qualified to be raised to the high priesthood and to officiate at the sacrifices of the altar. What is it talking about? What is the point of all this? There's a person who came in off the street, right, and they marry an Israelite. This Israelite gives birth to a daughter. This daughter, therefore, and then goes ahead and marries a priest. She gives birth to a son. He's now a priest, okay, because priesthood or Levite or Israelite goes through the father, where Jewishness goes through the mother, okay. Her offspring could end up being the high priest. So what does this midrash say? What? Not only accept, but understand the opportunity, how open, the potential for growth. Now, of course, it takes time to evolve, right? But the fact that you can, that's what Yitro heard. Yitro heard that, yes, he can grow, right? In other words, it's a little more like Andrew was saying over here, which is the person feels, I can't do it because I'll never make it. So, and therefore, because I can't make it, I'm going to learn to hate it. Because that's my only way of justifying why I'm not going ahead with this. So I hate it. Because I don't believe I could ever make it. Right? What did Yitro hear? He heard this law in Judaism that you can make it. And you will make it. And so therefore he did. And so therefore it says, and a proof that the stranger did not lodge in the street, the stranger meaning that you won't be in the street, but you'll totally become subsumed into the community over time. My doors I opened to the roadside. This refers to Yitro, for whom God brought down manna, as it says, and he commanded the skies above and opened the doors of heaven. What does that mean? This Midrash is bringing us a very remarkable story. Not only did Yitro convert, but what happened to Yitro? God sent a special package of manna to his door, so to speak. Now, do I take that literally or not? What does it mean figuratively? What was the manna? It was the nourishment that God directly gave the Jewish people. Now, let's say Yitro moves in. Now, he brought with him his lunch. Right? So there's no need for God to send a special portion of manna to him because he's got his lunch. No. It's important. Because the manna tells you, you've completely become part of the Jewish experience. Completely become part of the Jewish experience. Alright? Even though maybe you weren't there at Sinai at that moment, you're connecting yourself up to the Jewish soul means that you've completely connected up to everything the Jewish people have experienced. Everybody, or most people know, that conversion is not easy in Israel. Okay? The fact that conversion not being easy means that we're not open to conversion. No, it doesn't mean that. It means that we're careful. Right? But once a person converts and we feel that they are authentic about it, that's it. So our brother and our sister. Okay? Ah, but it was Yitro. You remember him? You remember the days? You know, we've got pictures of him serving every kind of idol. You know? No, no, no. Person does a tshuva. Person does a tshuva. Do you know that it's a Jewish law that you're not allowed to remind the person of their past? It's a Jewish law. You know, so you're not, it's even questionable whether you're allowed to say that this person's a Baal tshuva. Because that implies that, you know, oh, they were doing something before. No, that's it. They did it. They did it. We go on with life. Right? We don't keep opening up the baggage and we go on with life. So, it's a good, it's an important question. Technically, halachically, yes, it's true that what happens is that a person has to go to the court and they're being asked questions and they're told to go away. But that's all trying to see if they're real about it. You know? I mean, I have so many people that say, I want to talk to you. Right? So if I would say yes to every single one of them, right, I'd just be full. So often I say, yeah, I'll get together with you, but tomorrow. Now if they show up, I know they really wanted to talk to me. And if they don't show up, I'm glad that I saved myself the time because, you know, I got to decide who I'm going to spend time with. Okay? Otherwise, people who really I should be spending time with, I won't be spending time with. Okay? So it makes sense if a person comes to court and says, I'd like to be Jewish. He says, I can come back in a month from now. And you see if they come back. Oh, come back in 2 months from now. Right? Now you really see that this person is really serious if they come back. Okay? We just want to know that you're serious. For your sake. Because it would be terrible. Because in the meantime, all you're obligated in is 7 mitzvot. I mean, they're very broad. They encompass a tremendous amount of life. But I wouldn't be doing you a favor to now make you obligated in Shabbat and then you go ahead and not keep Shabbat. That it'd be better you never did this. Alright? You know, you don't want to take a job which increases your responsibilities and then once you've increased responsibilities, you become negligent. Okay? If you're going to take the job, then you can't be negligent. Otherwise, it's better you never took the job. Alright? And so, it's really out of love. Not out of an elitist position, not out of an exclusive club mentality, but out of love for a human being, are we very careful? Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean you won't be less responsible than they. In other words, that's the situation at this point. You know, they say, well, gee, why do I have to keep these? Well, you're taking the job. Well, how come he's not doing it? Oh, don't worry. He'll get his. And he's not doing it. Okay? But the legacy, well, but he's not doing it. Oh,
we're all at the other level that we're at, and we're allowed to grow and grow.
And they if they decide that the level that they're at is to now commit to Judaism, well then they better be sure that that's the level that they're at. Alright? The level that I'm at is that I'm already born a Jew and now I gotta struggle with it. That's the level that I'm at. The level that they're at is they're not a Jew and maybe they don't even have to become a Jew, maybe that's not what's important for them to become in their life, but for some reason they want to become that. Well, okay, well that's what it means. So now you're obligated in the mitzvot. Okay? That's the way it goes. Okay. Very good. So this is another example of the sense of opportunity for growth for the convert. Let's read the next piece. Let's take a couple minutes to read that. This is a little more difficult. But when you're looking at this piece, I want you to look at the metaphor. This is number 6. Okay, what is this metaphor referring to? Okay, let's look at this. Another explanation now, Yitro Herv. It is written, when thou smitest a scorner, the simple will become prudent. And also, when the scorner is punished, the thoughtless is made wise. Okay? So Amalek and Yitro were the advisors of Pharaoh. Now, this is a new piece of information over here. They weren't just rotten guys. They were accomplices to the crime of Pharaoh. They were his advisors. And now, this just makes the plot a little more thicker in who Yitro was. Okay? Pharaoh was the king of Egypt who enslaved the Jewish people and who criminally suppressed them, killed them. Okay. So, when Yitro beheld that God had wiped out Amalek, both from this world and the next world, he felt remorse and repented. For first it says, for I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under the heaven. And then, now Israel, then Yitro heard. So, how is the Midrash reading this? This is not new for us. In other words, what inspired Yitro to change? It was fear. He saw. I mean, the verse just before it said that Amalek was utterly wiped out, and then it said Yitro heard. Okay? What enabled Yitro, the wax in Yitro's ear, to melt? Do you hear what God did to the Jewish people? What enabled him to hear that others were not able to hear? It was the fear that shook him up, and he started to hear things that he never heard before. Right? That's what it takes. What does it take to get me to start hearing? So in this case, it was the fear that opened his ears. Okay. Said he, the only thing for me to do is join the God of Israel. Huh. I know the way to escape this whole thing. I better join the God of Israel. And of course, the question is what? What's the question one should ask? Is he joining out of fear alone? At this point, I see no indication yet. But also, what about who says he can? I mean, who says you can't? Well, then, I only have another choice, is to join the God of Israel. Who said you could do that? All right? What was his rationale for that? I mean, you would probably want to run from, if you're afraid of the God of Israel, well, what would you do? You'd run away from him. You wouldn't say, well, then I better join him. Who says you can? And maybe you better get out of his way, because if he sees you, buddy, you're in trouble, right? I mean, well, what does he mean by this? So the metaphor is brilliant. Wait until we get to the metaphor. Whence do you know that both the Amalekites and the Midianites, which is the country of Yitro, were the enemies of Israel? Because it says, and the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed, and also now the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east. In other words, we see the verses put the Amalekites and the Midianites together, and therefore they were quite close, they were allies. Similarly, of the wicked Balaam, it says that he saw Amalek, vis-a-vis that he did not retract from his evil ways. That's what I mean, he saw, that Amalek did not retract from his evil ways. But when he saw that Yitro repented, what does he say? He looked on the Canaanite. Now, okay, that we'd have to get into involved with this, that's so important for us now. How Balaam's, the verse shows us that Balaam saw that Yitro did tshuva, and Amalek did not do tshuva. Alright, let's go on. It can be compared to a hunter of birds. He had captured one and was about to capture another, when the bird perched itself on the statue of a king. Whereupon the hunter became perplexed and spoke thus to the bird, if I throw a stone at you, I may forfeit my life. Why? Because if I miss the bird but hit the statue of the king, what will that then be? What? That will be death. I'm in real trouble because I affronted the king. Alright? And he says, and if I use the pole, I fear lest it will not reach as far as the king's statue. That is, I can't get you. Why can't I get you? Because you're sitting on the statue of the king. You're in close proximity of the statue of the king, and therefore I can't get you. I know not what to do. All I can say is you have made a very wise escape. Okay? You're a very smart bird. Now, of course, the problem with this metaphor, with all metaphors, is you gotta line up the metaphors. Who's who? So the bird, obviously, is Yitro. But who's the hunter? Who's the hunter?
Balaam
is the hunter? It could be Balaam, but is it really Balaam who's the hunter? Is it in the hands of Balaam to get him? It's really God. Well, wait a second, then who's the statue of the king?
Israel.
Alright? Very interesting. Israel is the statue of the king. What do you have statues of the king around for? To remind people that there is a king. Alright? That there is a king. That's the meaning of Zion. What does Zion literally mean? Tzion. It's a monument. When a person passes away, what do they put on their grave? A tzion, which is a monument. Right? And that's what we're supposed to be. What are we supposed to be? A monument of God in the world. Alright? Now, this is really a phenomenal piece over here. Because the Midrash is showing the power of tshuva. It's really showing the power of the ability to return. Because really, Bilam represents, right, God's judgment. So how does one escape God's judgment? By running to God. Do you hear this? Generally, when you escape something, you run away from it. The way you run away from God the judge is by running into God the compassionate one. That's how you do it. In other words, God could not, so to speak, punish you because now you're in close proximity of God, so to speak. It would be as if he's punishing himself. As if you were a fly and someone was trying to kill you, what would you do? You'd cleave to his garments, right? Because he couldn't shoot you there. And so really, what is the meaning of the power of tshuva? How could I really believe that after everything I've done and all the right things I've done and all the consequences that surely I deserve in lieu of those activities? How could I really believe that I could escape those consequences by cleaving to the king? Right? And you escape the consequences. Because you're no longer you. You're completely different. You're one and united. You're transformed by virtue of your close proximity to the king. Alright? And this was what Yitro heard. What did he understand? He understood that I better do tshuva fast because I'm going to get wiped out. But then where do I run to escape the judge? I run to the judge. I cleave to the judge. Right? And then it's over. It's a beautiful, I was just stunned by this. It's a beautiful metaphor. The hunter is, so to speak, the force, the persecutor, the force of judgment against you. And the statue, right? The statue is Israel, the statue of the mitzvah, the statue is the Torah, right? Of the king. And by cleaving to the statue, it's a beautiful piece, beautiful piece. And this is what Yitro heard. Now again, is it what he personally heard? I don't know. That's not the point. The point is, what do I need to hear? What do I need to deeply understand about my life and the changes that I can make and that I should make and how I should make those changes? Right? And that's why it's a fantastic piece. Fantastic piece. Let's do these two more very quickly and then we'll end. Another explanation of now Yitro heard. It is written, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after days. This is in Koheles, Ecclesiastes. Very interesting idea. Cast your bread on the waters, you will find it many days. Will you find it in many days if you cast your bread in the waters? What will you find within 2 hours?
Soggy,
mushy, dissolved, yucky bread that was probably eaten by the fish. And yet Koheles says, no, cast your bread upon the water, it will come right back to you. Why does it mean that? Are men such fools as to cast their bread upon the waters? Concerning who then does it say this? So the Midrash is saying, you know, King Solomon was referring to Yitro over here. Because Yitro cast his bread upon the waters. What did he do? Concerning Yitro, who gave his bread to Moses. And why is Moses associated with water? For it says, call him that he may eat bread. Cast thy bread upon the waters. The waters refers to Moses, of whom it says, because I drew him out of the water. That's his name. What does the word Moses mean? Where did he get his name? Moses means I drew him from the water. Right? The daughter of Pharaoh who drew him out of the water gave him the name. And so every time you see Moses, what you remember is an association with getting out of water. Alright? Which of course is interesting because she drew him out of water and he drew the Jewish people out of water. And that's the splitting of the Red Sea. Right? That's the pattern in his life. Alright, why so? For thou shalt find it after many days. And Aaron came and the elders came to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. Now what is this Midrash trying to resolve? It's trying to figure out what's special about Yitro that he heard and nobody else heard. I mean, until now, Midrashim were trying to figure out what he heard. What motivated him to hear. What was special about him that he did hear. Okay? And really, the question is, what motivates us to hear? What's special about us that will enable us to hear? Okay? What should we be hearing? And that's all being resolved through these midrashim, and it's all the reflections upon this one verse. And what this is saying, what's special about Yitro is his connection to Moses. That's special about Yitro. One of the commentaries on the midrash, which there are a few unfortunately, says, brings down a Gemara. There's a verse in the Torah that says that you shall cleave to God. So the Talmud says, how do you cleave to God? So it says, a person who gives pleasure to a Torah scholar, a person who does business with a Torah scholar, a person who invites a Torah scholar into their home, cleaves to the divine.
What does cleave mean?
It means to bond with. To bond, to connect with the divine. Because since this man is so connected to the divine, by connecting yourself to this person, you connect up also with the divine. What enabled Yitro, who is this incredible, idolatrous person, what was that saving quality that enabled him to hear? It was his connection to Moses. It's the people you're relating yourself to, which will have a tremendous impact on how you're going to be and how receptive you're going to be to other things. Okay? And so therefore, when it says, Yitro, the priest of Midian, the father-in-law of Moses heard. Although he was the priest of Midian, and there's no reason we would have ever expected this guy would have heard anything, but because he was the father-in-law of Moses, it was that which put in him that receptivity that enabled him to hear. And so what we learn from this midrash is the importance of our friends. That in order to learn how to hear, it's important to be around other people who know how to hear. Right? If you're around people who don't like to hear and don't want to hear and afraid to hear, right? People who have not cleaned out the ears in many, many years, so you don't want to hang around these people. You just don't. Because it will not bring that power out in you. Right? Hearing is a collective thing. I'm connected to everybody. Right? If there's one person in the room that's not listening, the whole class gets damaged. I'm telling you, I know for a fact. Right? Everybody gets thrown off. You know? Somebody in the room is writing letters to their friends. Right? Everybody gets thrown off. And they don't even know. They wouldn't even know the person sitting there. That's how sensitive our connections are. That's how sensitive our connections are. And our hearing ability is very, very much interconnected. And therefore, Yitro, although he was the priest of Midian, one whose wax was waxing for, you know, he's the last person I thought would have heard. He heard. Because he was connected to Moses. And by virtue of that act of kindness to a holy man, that holiness already rubs off. Right? That holy man already rubs off. Let's do one more, and with that we'll finish. Another explanation of, hear ye the words of the Lord. This I pulled out, which is part of the same long list of midrashim over here. It's a verse that says, hear the words of the Lord, hear and your soul shall live. See how beloved Israel are, that he entices them. This itself is very beautiful. When God says he entices us, which we've seen this kind of metaphor in other places, this play between God and man, so to speak, this sense of enticement and arousal. Okay? God said to them, when a man falls from the roof, his whole body is bruised, and when the doctor visits him, he applies bandages to his head, hands, and feet, and all his limbs are covered with bandages. With me, God says, however, the case is not so. Man has 248 limbs, and the ear is but one of them. And even though his whole body be stained with transgressions, as long as his ear hearkens to the Torah, the whole body is vivified. For it says here, and your soul shall live. For this reason does it say here, ye the words of the Lord, O house of Israel. In the case of Yitro likewise, you will find that because he heard, he merited life. For he heard God's wonders, and he became a proselyte. And as it says, now Yitro heard all that God had done. This is it. The secret of life is learning to hear. That's how we fix ourselves. That's how we get to the next level. A doctor, if I break my bones, break my okay, I'll put a bandage over here, I'll put a cast over there, I'll put a needle over there. But when, so to speak, my whole body is stained, then only have to fix your ears. And if you can fix your ears, you will fix your years. That's really what happens. And that's what we have to learn to do. We have forgotten the art of deep, deep listening. Deep, deep hearing. And this is, by the way, part of the study of Torah. When you read the Torah, when you learn the Torah, what you need to learn to do is hear the verse carefully. What did the verse really say? What is it really? It's speaking, I'm not listening, I'm not hearing. Well, and so that's the first thing I've got to work on, is learning to hear.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.